Hi, my name's David Jones and I'm chair of Brighton Yoga Foundation. And we have a project to try to map the history of yoga in Brighton, which we think is very interesting because yoga is a very interesting city. I grew up here as a teenager and it's changed enormously since then. And charting that change of the city over the last 40, 50 years or so, and how yoga has played a role in that, I think is really interesting. So we have this history of yoga project, and I'm interviewing a number of people who played a key role in that. And I'm delighted to have met again after a long time, an old friend, not old, a friend for a long time, Ali Hill here, who set up Yoga Haven in Brighton. So welcome, Ali.
Thank you for having me on. No, it's an honour, actually, because I saw already Pete Blackaby and Gary. And it's an honour that you actually invited me to share my story. Yeah.
Oh, no, not at all. The honour is all ours, because we have to honour the people who actually helped set up this burgeoning yoga community in the city. We reckon that we have the largest yoga community per head of population of anywhere in the UK and probably Europe.
Yeah, I can imagine. It's very, very popular.
Yeah, and we have 800 yoga teachers in Brighton, which is one in every 300 adults is a yoga teacher. And I don't think there's a bigger yoga community elsewhere. So you played a role in that. So thank you for that. But first of all, just how did you get into yoga anyway? Where were you? How did you get into it? And why was it important to you?
Yeah, so my very, very first experience was I spent in the early 90s, 5 years living in Japan. And I worked in, yeah, you probably didn't know that about me, but no. I spent 5 years working in Japan as in my early 20s. And one of the girls that I worked with in a club that I worked in, she was from Brazil and she was doing yoga before our shift started. And I remember going, what are you doing? What are you doing? And she said, oh, I'm doing yoga. And I was like, oh, can you show me, teach me? And she said, oh, I'm not a teacher, but just kind of copy what I'm doing. So I was just trying to copy her. And I remember doing shoulder stand and not knowing what I was doing, but thinking it was fun. And then I ended up going to live in Sydney in Australia. And it was actually my second ever yoga class, proper yoga class there, being taught by a teacher that I thought, I want to teach this, which is pretty profound, right? But that's the reality, is that I just knew within two classes that this was something that I was going to really get into.
Gosh.
Profound. Yeah. And so I'm quite an obsessive person and started practicing it all the time, and then found myself living a few months later in Vancouver. And my friend, who I'm still good friends with now, Kristen, said to me, have you heard about yoga in the hot room? And I was like, no, what's that? But it had this like appeal, because I like being warm. I like getting hot. I'm not one of these people that's always cold. And I found the very, very first Bikram studio in the whole of Canada, which is around the corner from my house in Kitsilano by the beach in Vancouver. And I went there and I remember what I was wearing to the day in my very first class, a pair of black leggings, a purple stripe down the side of the leggings. And I remember it was like a fairly large room, very smelly, carpet on the floor, no showers, not really much of a reception, real kind of like spit and sawdust, you know, the first ever Bikram studio in Canada. And I walked in not having a clue. And I remember the teacher going, put your hand up if you're new. And I didn't, because I was too shy to do that. As often when you start something new, you often like have many fears and a little bit of anxiety around starting something new. So I never ask people if they're new in class, because I know how that felt for me. Anyway, by the end of it, I remember trying really, really, really hard. And I guess I had natural flexibility because I used to dance when I was young. And I came out of the class, my hair, it was as if I'd just got out of the shower. I was so sweaty and I was as purple as the stripe down the side of my leggings. And I remember walking home thinking like, what the hell was that? But loving the feeling and feeling so high. And then going back then every day. And I think it was literally a few months, 3-4 months later, that I found myself on the Bikram yoga training. Yeah, and that was back in 2001.
Right.
Yeah, so that was my entry into yoga, and practiced a lot in a short space of time. I guess from a physical point of view, was quite natural at it because of that flexibility. I was quite athletic, and so I was just really, really drawn to it. But the big thing was how wonderful it made me feel, like mentally, right? Clarity, yeah.
Calmness. So you lived all around the world then.
I spent 10 years living all in these different places.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to have another interview all about that sometime. Yeah. So there you are. Mm. You've done your gone to Bikram classes. And gone to the first Bikram studio and then Bikram teacher training. Mm. And what was that like? Was that with Mr. Bikram?
Yes.
The charismatic, but turns out rather unpleasant, yes. Mr. Bikram.
Yeah. So I must have been, it was 2001, so 20 years ago. And so I was in my late 20s and I went on that training. There was it 365 or 260? Wow. There was hundreds of people on the training. And I think it lent itself to somebody young that liked to be in that kind of environment. And I had a really great time. Mm. I absolutely loved it. It was so unique practicing. I think it was 265 on my course. And it was 9 weeks. You practiced every morning. I think you did one class a day or two classes a day. I can't even remember. It's so long ago. But you practice for 9 weeks with all of those people in the same room, sweating and doing this hot yoga, this crazy hot yoga, and Bikram on his throne, like yelling profanities at us all, which actually worked for me because I guess that I kind of liked that and found him. Certainly when I was there, I thought he was crazy, but I never saw anything other than swearing at us. I didn't see any of the stuff that, you know, he's had this fall from grace. And I watched the guru, what's it called, on Netflix?
Yeah.
Yogi Guru Grim. Predator.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I thought, wow, I was one of those girls, like in the hot pants and the bra tops, like young women, like scantily clad, very sweaty. But that was, in context, it was felt all quite normal. And at the time, I guess I kind of saw him as a very interesting, narcissistic, very funny character. Mm. That somehow had this, you know, draw with all of these people wanting to better their lives and doing it through this medium of Bikram yoga, which I think that I'm always grateful because of where I've ended up with my business, that I had a good experience. And actually, if I hadn't gone on that training, Yoga Haven might not ever exist.
Yeah.
So I always feel gratitude to that. Mm. And I guess that he lost his way, as many people in power, men in power can.
Power corrupts.
Yeah. Yeah. But I had a good time.
Yeah, many people did, yeah. And many of these fallen gurus did nevertheless send lots of people on the path, which has then been very positive. So, that always has to be remembered. So where was this Bikram teacher training? Sorry, I didn't catch
that. It was in Los Angeles.
That was in Los Angeles, another place around the world.
Yeah, I lived in LA, okay. So again, wonderful. I was like someone that loved to go to Venice Beach and have the parties. And I mean, I loved it. Any time off from the training, I was at Venice Beach, you know. And I actually had a really great time. It's my first time living in LA and, you know, I spent a bit of time there. I didn't go and rent the student accommodation that the Bikram business sold. I got a house and I lived with somebody, a guy called Dylan, in that house and kind of kept myself separate, which was a good idea.
Yeah.
And so I did my own thing a bit.
So how did you get from Los Angeles in 2001 to Brighton?
Yes.
Why Brighton after Vancouver, Sydney, Japan and LA?
That's a really good question. So after teaching Bikram for about 6 months, I got a job in Hong Kong, another city that I lived in. I know, I've lived everywhere, at a company called Pure Yoga, which are now one of the biggest brands in Asia. And they were just starting out and I got recruited. And I spent a few months over there and I sort of got into different styles of yoga and I learned a little bit about the business aspect, I guess. And I thought, I'm going to go home to the UK and I'm going to open a studio. But I'm originally from the Midlands, not that you can tell because I don't have the accent, but I could easily slip back into it. But I basically went back to the Midlands and I said to my friends, I'm going to open a yoga studio. Where should I go and live? And I didn't want to do it in Wolverhampton. And my friend said, Fatboy Slim does great beach parties in Brighton. Mm. You should try Brighton. It's really alternative and I think it would suit you. So I was like, okay. And I came down to Brighton with my partner at the time, Dallas Cruz or Nikki. And I had this vision of opening a yoga studio. So I moved down here and...
What year was this?
2003. January 2003. Literally like the 3rd of January 2003. And I became obsessed with trying to find a space to open a yoga studio, which my obsessive personality has done... You know, it's not always a good thing, but in business it can be, because I was very, very determined and driven that nothing would stop me finding a space. And I looked at large spaces and small spaces, and I found this place in Donkey Mews, and it was a music centre. And the guy was selling the lease. So I said, okay, this looks like it could work. And it was in August 2003 that I had the opening party. I remember it. I was quite drunk. I was wearing pink, and I had all of these people from Brighton come who probably thought, who's this new kid on the block?
Yeah.
And it was the first hot yoga centre in Brighton.
I want to come back to that in a minute, but when it started, was it just doing hot yoga?
Or yes.
It was, yeah. Okay.
So me and Dallas were both Bikram teachers, and it was basically doing... Bikram yoga, but slightly changing things so that
Without
I didn't get
Bikram.
Sued. Yeah. And I had his secretary come over and, you know, a bit of a threatening kind of like, you can't do this. And I was like, well, different jurisdiction. I think I can, because I've just worked in Hong Kong for a guy that was doing it. And he taught me that that was fine.
Mm.
And it was, back in the time when there was then an actual Bikram studio opening in Brighton a few months after me.
Oh.
Yes, which was the old perfume factory.
Right.
So there was animosity there because we both kind of came to do the same thing, but I went away from the Bikram brand and they stayed with the Bikram brand. So there was a bit of that kind of like local competition, which is always healthy, I think.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, just going back, you know, pre your arrival in Brighton to the yoga community in Brighton, I mean, in the other interviews that we've done, the first Iyengar studio opened in 1969 in Kemp Town, and Iyengar came to Brighton, and there's a picture of him sitting on the beach.
Wow, I didn't know that.
The next studio to open was Brighton Buddhist Centre, although not in its current location. It was in a different place. I can't remember when they moved to Tichborne Street. The third was Brighton Natural Health Centre, 1981. Evolution Arts, I think, was doing stuff in Brighton.
Yes,
I don't know, and they're I think connected to the same Buddhist community as the Brighton Buddhist Centre, actually.
Mm.
But I don't know if they were doing yoga classes then or not. I wondered if you remembered.
I feel
they were.
Like they were, and one thing I wanted to share is that one of my fondest memories of starting out in Brighton. Yes, I had Yoga Haven, but I wanted to branch out with my own practice because I was obsessive about the practice, the asana. And I went to the Buddhist Center a few times, but my fond memories, where maybe I even met you, was with Julie Martin at the Natural Health Center.
Yes.
And she became my teacher, and I absolutely fell in love with her and Ashtanga.
Mm.
And I practiced all the time. That's where I think maybe met you. I met Chris Swain and Sarah Miles, became quite friendly with. And and I have very fond memories of cycling from Brunswick Square, where I lived, which was around the corner from Yoga Haven, to the Natural Health Centre, and became really into the Mysore practice. And, you know, that was a nice memory for me. But I think that Evolution Arts were doing a few classes.
Yeah, yeah. That's
but there wasn't much competition.
No.
Other than that. That was it. And then I was like the new girl on the block,
I think the one other one which I'm investigating is the Anahata Clinic in Kemp Town, which I think was doing some, might have been doing some yoga. I think they opened in 92, but I'm not sure how when they started doing yoga. But
yeah.
Yeah. And of course, now we have 20 yoga studios in the city.
Crazy. That's why I don't have one.
But anyway, so yes. You started off doing the hot yoga in 2003. Mm. And when did you start branching out? Because I mean, I came to Yoga Haven fairly early on, yeah. But I was doing Ashtanga. So you must have fairly quickly started introducing other classes as well.
Yeah, I think I had the foresight that teaching just one style of yoga, and you know, when I came from a Bikram background, and it was definitely one size fits all, this is what you do, and that's what I was taught. So initially that's what happened, but very, very quickly I learned that one size does not fit all, and exactly, that you yes. have to branch out for different needs for different people. So I think that must have been in the first couple of years I fell in love with Ashtanga, and then I was like, let's get some Ashtanga on the timetable, and then other styles, and it kind of gradually, I mean, hot yoga is still the heart of what I do at Yoga Haven, my studios in London and yes. Birmingham, which we can talk about. But
and it remained the core.
And it has.
For Yoga Haven right until it was taken over recently.
Yeah. But you have to offer different things, don't you? And one of the things that I think my foresight was beneficial was I realised fairly early in my teaching journey that I wanted to become a trainer and teach people to become teachers. Mm. And that became an arm of my business that was extremely successful and still is really successful. It's kind of one of my main kind of focus points is training, teacher training. Now, I wouldn't have been able to do that, I don't think, if I'd have just sort of stuck to that. Like Bikram method, and because you need to know so much more.
Exactly. Yeah,
yeah.
I think most of the studios don't make money as studios, but they make money on the teach training. That's my impression from talking to the studio owners in the city.
I think in Brighton, it's too competitive to make money just as having a little centre. You've got to think of other ways to, you know, London's a different kettle of fish because of the population. Mm. And pre-pandemic, the studios were doing really well on their own.
Yeah.
But, things are tough
indeed.
Now.
Yeah, we can come back to that.
Yeah.
So back to Brighton, 2003 to 2005, you start expanding into other styles. Do you remember some of the teachers? I mean, I'm hoping you're gonna name a few teachers that I used to go to, but the teachers that you brought in.
Well, I obviously love Chris Swain because he came and did some stuff. And I think that Sarah Miles did some stuff there for a while. So she used to train underneath Julie
and then Russell Case.
And then Russell, and then I had, like, from my core of, like, hot yoga teachers, I had Claire Maddalena, who owns Lush Tums and branched and is an amazing woman and knows so much about pregnancy yoga and giving birth and babies. And she's an incredible force to be reckoned with. She's a wonderful woman. And she still is in Brighton doing that. She's been doing that for years.
Right.
Yeah, Lush Tums. And then Tony Roberts, who taught for us with the hot yoga. And then obviously, Nikki Harmon, who you'll know well.
Of course, Sally Brooks,
and then another lady called Sally Parks, who taught for a little while. But Sally Brooks was there for a long time.
Yes. She became one of my teachers.
She's Ashtanga, wasn't she? She's in Eastbourne. So she taught there for years. A lovely lady called Catherine Varley.
Yes.
She was there for a little bit as well. Who are you remembering?
Well, Sally.
Yourself?
Jonathan? I ended up teaching there, at some point, when I began to teach. But I didn't actually do my teach training until 2007. So, I mean, I was unofficially teaching sort of groups of people before then, but officially I didn't become a teacher till then. So, So there you are, expanding outwards, but you also expanded outwards across the country, didn't you? And Brighton was your flagship, your opening sort of journey into owning a studio. But then London, Birmingham.
Yes.
Tell us more about the expansion of your
Yoga Haven. So I never had this big business plan to have many studios. I guess that the reason I've maybe been fairly successful is that I've learned that I'm good at taking risks. Like I don't have the fear factor. So when I've opened my studios, I never think, well, what if I fail? I just don't have that in my DNA, maybe because my dad was a professional poker player.
Oh.
So, yeah. So I grew up in a gambling household. So, like, I didn't have that fear factor, that cautiousness. I just really, truly believed in myself and my decisions. And that has led me to be successful as an entrepreneur. But although, you know, as you get older, I guess it gets a little bit more challenging. But my parents passed away very close together of cancer. Back in like 2008. So they died about 18 months apart. Mm. And I was living in Brighton, but my father passed away and then my mum got sick. So I went back to the Midlands. Mm. And I didn't really know what else to do. And I didn't want to be living in Birmingham, but I was. And I decided to open Yoga Haven in Birmingham. And actually, just going back slightly, when I opened the Brighton studio, I didn't have any money, Davey. And I, you know, was a young girl with no experience. I sort of hopped around the world, like, you know, just doing any kind of jobs that I could find, then become a yoga teacher. And I came back to the UK and said to my parents, can you give me some money to open a yoga studio? And they were like, on your bike, no way, find your own way, which was great. My dad taught me that. It's like, find your own way. And I, the government were doing a scheme called the Loan Guarantee Scheme. And that is how I got the money to open the Brighton studio.
Oh.
So they basically said to the bank, give her the money and young people, good business plan, give them the money and we'll secure it. 70% of the loan, I think, they would secure to the bank.
Wow.
So that's how I got it. And it was a small amount of money back then. It was like 40 grand or something, whereas now you need a lot. Anyway, jump forward again. So by the time I opened Birmingham, I had then a few years under my belt. I could then borrow money from the bank.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I did.
Mm.
Set up Yoga Haven in Birmingham, was there for a few years. Maybe I was there 2-3 years. Met my partner, Leon Taylor, still with him now. We've got a little boy. He's a retired Olympic athlete. If you ever watch any of the Olympic diving, the 10-meter platform, it's his voice that you hear.
Wow.
The Tom Daly events, that's Leon's voice. Yeah, because he's the commentator for the diving on the BBC. Yeah.
Respect.
Yeah, yeah. He's a silver medalist from Athens 2004 10-meter platform. Anyway, I met him on my teacher training in Morocco. And the rest is history. We moved to London and that's really where Yoga Haven took off. And I had a studio in Clapham that I've still got now. It's probably my biggest and best studio.
Mm.
And Nikki Harmon took over the Brighton studio when I left and I became a silent partner for some years.
When did she take over?
About 2008, I would say, something like that.
When you moved up to Midlands?
Yeah, about 2008.
Yeah.
When I moved to the Midlands, yeah, exactly. And then, she had that for many years. And yeah, Yoga Haven took off in London, and I still have 3 studios in London, albeit one of them I opened just before the pandemic. I signed the lease in February 2020 in Croydon at the train station because I sort of thought, right, commuter belt, loads of offices, this is a great spot in the big complex there called Ruskin Square.
Mm.
And I'm there. I'm still there. The landlords have been great. And so fingers crossed
lucky.
That it survives. Yeah, I was lucky. So I didn't think I'd open another studio at that point, but there you go, I did. So
Clapham, Croydon, where's the other one?
Richmond. London, yeah. And Birmingham. So I've now got 4 and there's one in Solihull, but that's a franchise.
Mm. And what would you say now to people about what it was like to run the yoga studios then? Because it's quite different now because, let's say, there's 20 now in Brighton. I don't know, there's probably a couple of hundred in London, you know. I mean, they're a bit to a penny in a sense compared
it's
to the
super,
old days.
Yeah.
What was it like in those early days in running Yoga Haven in Brighton? I mean, did you go around and check what people were doing at Brighton Natural Health Centre and the Buddhist Centre? Did you sort of go around and spy on them to get advice or whatever?
No, I guess that back then I still had such a passion for yoga. And I'm not going to lie, I do not have that passion anymore because I have spent the last 20 years building a career.
Mm.
So if you ask anyone that's, you know, worked in an every day within one industry, you are at some point going to fall out of love with it a little bit because it's changed so much as well. So I don't have that same passion. But back in the day, I had such a love and a passion of yoga that I would go to those places purely because I wanted to practice different classes. But I didn't feel like I ever had that territorial edge, really, in terms of those studios that were in Brighton at the time. I loved learning new styles. And so those memories that I have back then of those other places were really positive and lovely, actually. The only thing I had animosity was with the Bikram lady.
That's quite notorious, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, I think in some ways, you know, I mean, I was just thinking about it when you were saying that. In some ways, you were the first what I would call modern yoga studio in the city, because all the previous ones were either charities or came out of a particular tradition. And although you did come out of the Bikram tradition, you very rapidly expanded into the range of styles and offerings that you had. And that was the first studio that really had that, I think, in that sort of way, in an independently owned studio, you know, which now there are quite a few of in the city.
Thank you. That's a compliment. And I guess in Brighton, I didn't really see it that way. But certainly when I moved to London and I opened Clapham, I think it was the first of its kind, really, in terms of we weren't a Bikram studio, which there were some just purely Bikram studios that were pretty smelly and not very nice. And I went for something big, something quite posh, lots of showers, high end, you know. You walked in, there was, you know, it had this kind of energy and like a modern take on it. And with that comes this commercialization, right, where it was became a big business. And I think that yoga now, I would say that it's extremely competitive, and you would want to really, really consider the risks if you were going to open a yoga studio in these times, even pre-pandemic.
Speaks a daughter of a poker player.
I know.
Good advice indeed.
Yeah.
I mean, it's funny, talking to yoga studio owners over the last sort of years, I mean, they all talk about how they have a yoga hat on and a business hat on. And I always joke and say, you can't wear two hats at once. And it's very difficult. You know, they're constantly drawn between the needs of the business on the one hand and their passion for yoga on the other, and the two often are in conflict, aren't they? I mean, it's not an easy journey, is it?
No, it's not. And I guess that's like, I feel like I do try and keep some of the kind of humble beginnings that I had as a woman in business, how that I interact with the people that work for me. I'm up there when I'm at the studios, I still will clean the floors and help the other teachers out. And I try to keep this kind of groundedness. Because when I first opened Yoga Haven, I did do all the cleaning, did the reception, did the everything. And so I feel like when you move through the ranks like that, it's good. It keeps you grounded. It can be difficult to kind of make business decisions and then try and kind of have your yoga hat on, as you say. But I think that you can do both. I guess it's all to do with your intention, isn't it? And how making the right decisions and being kind and compassionate in those processes. Also, something that I do care about is the environment. And I've tried to do the carbon neutral stuff with the hot yoga studios. And I've tried to, certainly on my teacher training, raise a lot of awareness around animal activism. That's something close to my heart. And I think in some ways that's my dharma, is that on my teacher training to try and reach out and educate people on the environment and on animal activism. And that's where I feel like I hopefully can make the most difference, and something I'm super passionate about. I think you can do both. Think you can do both.
Yeah.
Attitude, intention.
In fact, I think it was Nikki, actually, who said this to me. It's something which I've quoted a number of times. I'm pretty sure it was her who said that when I was asking her how things were going, she said, I spend more time fixing the boiler than I do teaching. And I just thought, it's always stuck with me, that quote, you know, about, it sort of sums up, you know, the yoga studio owners' you know, problem.
Yeah, yeah.
The boiler goes down.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So, yeah, everything goes out the window while you're trying to sort the boiler out.
Yeah, you know? Yeah, so, yeah, sure.
And I'm sure that must have happened. Those sorts of problems must come up
managing
constantly.
People, like the hardest part of my job isn't the teaching. It's the and I still teach, you know. I was teaching yesterday at the Richmond studio and but yeah, managing people, I found the most challenging because I suppose we all want people to like us, don't we? And I become pretty friendly with the people and the teachers that work at Yoga Haven. And I think that's been part of my success, that I never want to get above my station. But then within that, when you get teachers or staff that aren't happy about your systems that you've got in place, because you have to, because this is how you make money, that I find really difficult.
Mm.
Yeah, that's probably been the biggest learning for me, is like learning to actually don't get so emotionally involved and attached, like, you know, have faith in what you're doing, and just be kind along the way.
And did you sort of observe the growth, that's not a good phrase, is it? The growth of more yoga studios in the city and the increasing competitiveness. Because I remember even as recently as 2014, when we had our first Brighton Yoga Festival, without naming names, one yoga studio said, "We won't be involved in your festival if this other unnamed studio are involved," for example. So as late as even 2014, that type of thing was happening. Not so much now, but, you know, it was happening. I mean, did you witness that competitiveness as it suddenly it mushroomed? Because the amount of yoga in Brighton just went through the roof, didn't it?
Yeah, and I often wonder whether in other industries it's the same. So, like, and maybe it's because we do yoga that it feels a little, you know, almost close to the bone of, that doesn't feel quite right. But actually, I'm sure in other businesses, there must be this territorial kind of competitiveness. But I feel long in the tooth and I just do not have that anymore. Mm. And I feel like, certainly when it's things are evolving and there's more and more places opening up, it drives that competitiveness. But I genuinely left that behind quite some time ago. But I did see it happening, and I guess I was a part of that because there was this huge competitiveness between me and other hot yoga studios.
Mm. Yeah.
And now I really just don't. I'm not interested.
Yeah.
No, but for sure I saw it, and I've seen it in London. Maybe it's just natural in business that you have your eyes on what other people are doing in the same industry.
Mm. It's funny because, I mean, in Brighton, it's like, again, I've made this analogy before, but it's like there's like streets in London which are full of restaurants, really good restaurants, and more restaurants open there. And you think, is there space for all these? But the reason that they open there is because everybody goes to that road. And Brighton's a bit like that with the yoga. It's like more and more yoga studios open up, but it's because everybody comes to Brighton to do yoga.
Yeah.
And so although there's a built-in competitiveness because you fear what was going to happen, another restaurant opening, another yoga studio opening, actually it's just sort of self-perpetuating growth of the whole thing.
And
Brighton
people
is very much a yoga capital almost of the UK, I think.
For
I don't know what your impression is because you're based elsewhere as well now. But,
yeah, I mean, London, it's pretty saturated. I wouldn't want to open a yoga studio in Brighton or London right now. I've seen Brighton. I guess it draws in a lot of these kind of alternative people who, that's why there's so much yoga in this city, is because there's so many people like us.
Mm.
It's interesting, isn't it? But it has grown exponentially.
Yeah.
It's definitely a yoga city, but there's more and more people practicing, which is why there's more studios. And that's wonderful, isn't it? Because, like, if you think back to 20 years ago when we were doing it, you know, it wasn't a mainstream thing, whereas now it's on adverts, it's in TV shows, like, you name it, it's become a mainstream thing, like going to the gym.
We often joke that everybody in Brighton knows somebody who does yoga.
Mm.
You know, and as the Brighton Yoga Foundation, we want to make it so that everybody in Brighton has the ability and access to yoga if they want to use it, sort of thing.
Which, you know, is wonderful.
Which is turning that around.
Yeah,
you know,
where you're making a difference.
Yeah.
Like, that's, like, thank God, for you doing that, really.
Yeah. And the I mean, the other yoga studios, I mean, since then, I mean, there's, I mean, Yoga Haven has now been in Brighton, has been taken over. Did you feel sad about that? I mean, or did you want to get rid of it? Oh, I also felt there were a lot of problems with the building, weren't there? I know over the years, and maybe you were secretly glad to get shot of it. I don't know.
We had a tricky landlord. Definitely, and he is still probably a tricky landlord. But it was bittersweet in a way, because when I didn't used to practice there that often over in the last 10 years that I've been living in London, but when I would come down, it always had that special place in my heart, and I still practice there now, actually, even though I don't have it. I still try and every few weeks go to a class, and it will always have a very, very deep special place in my heart, because it was my flagship studio. It was a time in my life, you know, that was exciting, and if it wasn't for that centre, I wouldn't have gone on to do all of these other studios that I've been able to have a successful career and become financially independent. And really, it's all down to that beautiful little place in Donkey Mews. So as much as I didn't want to own it anymore and haven't been involved in it for some years, I was actually really happy that it went to somebody in my community. He was someone, Stephen Gill,
and he's lovely. Hello, Stephen, if you're listening.
Hello, Stephen. So he did my teacher training years ago, and he was a really popular teacher at Yoga Haven in Birmingham, and a really lovely fella. And he decided when we put it up for sale that he wanted to change his lifestyle, move down from Birmingham, really enjoying it. And he's done an amazing job, because it needed TLC, and he's brought that energy to the place. It's looking really beautiful. He's a great teacher, and it's offering all those different things. And I'm really, really pleased that it's still there and he's survived the pandemic. And you know, if you can survive the pandemic, you're going to be okay. So I always will have a little special place in my heart.
And for those maybe listeners who don't know, it's now called Eka. Yeah. And I can't remember what Eka means.
Eka, it means Eka. One. Yeah.
It means one.
Okay. In Sanskrit.
Right. Yeah. Of course, yes.
Yeah, Eka.
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah. Okay. Yep. Yeah, and that's still in Donkey Mews, so those who want to go. And Stephen's actually is quite community-minded as well, actually, isn't he? I mean, he's been involved, I know, in a lot of sort of criminal justice type of yoga situations, because I've had a few chats with him, and I know he's quite committed to that sort of approach, which is very positive.
Yeah, very. Yeah.
And so what are your plans now for Yoga Haven? Are you going to just keep it ticking over in London as it is, or do you have any great plans to launch any further developments in your empire?
You know what? I never thought I'd do the Croydon one, but I did. So never say never, but I think like it's a hard time to even consider opening another yoga studio. But I feel like I'm kind of at a point where I'm rebuilding, because we were closed for so long. I've taken all the bounce back loans and the restart loans, and you know, I feel like it's kind of right, ground up again, and rebuilding, trying to get people back into the studios. Some people, members, are scared to come back to be in a hot room with each other. You know, the from a commercial aspect, what works well at a yoga centre is lots of bums on mats close together.
Of course, yeah.
That can't happen now. I mean, we're still doing some social distancing at our studios in the yoga room, so we're still not at full capacity. But also we don't have enough people yet coming back to the studios, and it's about creating safe spaces. I mean, the one thing that people maybe don't always realise about our hot yoga studios is that in London and in Birmingham, we've got really good ventilation systems. And so actually, they're probably cleaner air than going to a non-hot studio where they don't have any ventilation unless they open a window.
Yeah.
So
it's a bit like aeroplanes, actually. People are afraid of aeroplanes, but actually they have got incredibly really sophisticated air systems, haven't they?
So, like what you have in a surgery, as in if you're having surgery, right, in a hospital. I think my job right now is to put energy and effort back in, create safe spaces for people to come back. And once they come through the door and they kind of let go of that anxiety of being in a room together, that they'll feel safe enough to keep coming back and come back to the community. Because the other thing that's changed so much is when we shut the studios, of course, all of our wonderful teachers, and some of them are my best friends, they then started doing it online themselves, and they became very lucrative. So they actually did really well. And I was really pleased for them because, you know, it's their time and they were earning like 4, 5, 10 times as much money as traveling around London, trying to, you know, make a living for themselves. So they all did really well. And I'd sit with a couple of my best friends, Amy and Sunita in particular, who were like, Els, we're just doing so well on our online classes. And I'm there, like, but my doors are shut. And I remember when Boris made the announcement, I was staying with them in Putney, and he made the announcement that we were going back into that second lockdown. And I was like, it close to tears. And they were like, great. So, but you just got to roll with it and support each other, you know.
The yoga landscape has changed. I mean, you'll probably know the Life Centre in Islington just closed down.
I do know that. Yeah, so sad. I used to go there. Yeah.
Yeah, which is a really, you know, prestigious studio. Mm. In fact, we had a at the online festival that we had this year. It had to be online again. We had a panel on yoga post pandemic, and we had the CEO of the Life Centre there, and he said that they'd lost, you know, 67% of their members during the pandemic. And that seems to be replicated around Brighton. Most people are saying even now the yoga classes are much smaller.
They are.
They've lost most of their members. It's almost like we have to recreate the yoga community again because the yoga community's changed. A lot of people have gone online. Some of the people then became teachers themselves from doing so much online.
Yeah.
It's almost like we have to rebuild the yoga community again. Yeah. I get that sense.
Yeah, that's what I mean about me sort of starting from the ground up again. Like rebuild, it's all about rebuilding because it has changed. Because, you know, thank God I offer hot yoga because they can't do that at home. And my studios, the non-hot classes generally aren't that busy, but the hot ones are busier picking up.
That's interesting. So, I thought of that, of course. Yeah.
So, you know, that I was
not like. Unless you have a sauna at home.
Yeah. So that's maybe my saving grace, is that I always kept hot yoga at the heart of what I did. And the reason I did that is because, you know, things go in and out of fashion, and hot yoga once was very much in fashion and less so now. But I don't have as many competitors because there's not as many hot yoga studios in the country compared to the non-hot. So in London, if you looked at Clapham as an area, which is quite vast, really, with all of the different parts of Clapham, there are so many non-hot studios and probably 3 or 4 hot ones, so loads of non-hot, 3 or 4 hot, and therefore I've been able to make it work. So, but yeah, it has changed and you have to start again, but I don't mind that. And the other thing is that I've never been financially driven either. That's not a driver for me. Like, I wasn't worried in the pandemic. I just was like, well, crack on, see what happens. Cross each bridge when you come to it. You know, if you lose a studio, don't worry, you'll find another way and you'll be fine.
Yeah.
One thing I did do was in the beginning of the pandemic, created an online teacher training.
Right.
That was a really good move on my part because I always was against online teacher training. I was like, you can't learn to become a yoga teacher online until I found a way to make it work. And so we offer an online course that during the pandemic did really well, less so now. We get small numbers, but still, I've already got the content. It's all pre-recorded, and there's some live interactive sessions. But that was, I suppose, hopefully shows like that kind of entrepreneurial flair that I have. I was like, right, we're all sitting at home. What can I do with Yoga Haven? I'll turn it online. That worked really well. I got 25 people in my first online teacher training.
Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do worry that sometimes perhaps we are making too many yoga teachers.
Oh, it's like carbon cutouts, isn't it? It's like,
I mean, seriously, that it maybe we're all doing too much yoga teacher training courses and things like that. It's not aimed at you. I mean, it's aimed at everybody.
Oh, you know,
I worry that there's too many.
There is,
and as a result, it's very, very difficult. Hardly anyone I know works full time as a yoga teacher. Nearly everybody does something else.
You've got to
be a celebrity.
Yeah,
you've got to be a Julie now, living in Hawaii.
It's very hard to make it work.
Much as I love her, you know, it's difficult, isn't it?
Yeah. It's really difficult, and you know, that's a really good point because everyone's a yoga teacher, right? And when they come on the teacher training, one of the first bits of advice I say is: do not give up your day job. Don't think you can just quit your well-paid job in the city.
That's what I tell people.
And then make a living as a yoga teacher. It's really, really difficult.
Do it for fun.
Yeah, do it for fun. Maybe then you work at your law firm 3 days and you do a couple of days teaching yoga and you find a bit more of that work-life balance. Yeah. That does well, I think, for people. But certainly, when I started the Yoga Haven teacher training, again, there was hardly any courses available.
Yeah.
And now there's just, I mean, everybody does it. And there's no, it's not, as you know, but maybe some of the people listening don't know, it's not a regulated industry.
Yeah, I think so, it should be.
Yeah, it should be.
I think the idea that you can set up a yoga teacher training course and put rubbish content in it and then be a yoga teacher is a worry.
Yeah, no, absolutely. There's no standards, and you know, people think Yoga Alliance are setting the standards, and don't know how much you know about them, but let's just say I gave them my money for many years and they never came to see if I could teach or not. Marketing.
So just finally then, just to say, by the way, we have, I don't know whether you've seen, we've actually done an interview now with Julie Martin.
I haven't.
Which is now up on the website.
Oh,
and,
wonderful.
So because she's another important person, and I used to go to her classes, as you said earlier. So, and still am big friends with Julie as well. Desperate to go to Hawaii to visit some stage.
Yeah, that would and, be lovely.
But just in terms of the history, I mean, looking back now, I mean, it's interesting. We were talking earlier before this interview about the development of the Brighton Yoga Foundation and how that's developed sort of organically. But similarly, like with you and your business and the Brighton Yoga community, I mean, any last sort of reflections on the growth of Brighton yoga community and all that that you want to make? It's just...
Yeah, I mean, I just think it's wonderful. I know that from a business point of view, there's more and more competition, and for people setting up their own studios or trying to make a career as a yoga teacher, you know, it is hard. But I think we have to remember that there'll be always new people coming to the yoga mat, and there is a lot of magic in that happens within those four corners of the mat. And if we can reach out, like you are doing so wonderfully, to people who have never practiced, that maybe they have a bit of anxiety about coming because, you know, they might think in their mind, oh, it's turning yourself into a pretzel and I'm not flexible, I can't do yoga. There's so much more, so many more layers to it. And just to really remember the roots of yoga, which is trying to be compassionate to all living beings that we inhabit this
and
earth.
Creatures.
Yeah, exactly. All living beings so that we inhabit the earth with. So thinking about the decisions you make every day, whether that's the food on your plate or, you know, the car that you drive. And just, keep that magic, that essence of yoga alive, really. And the more new people coming to the yoga mat, the better and the more magic that happens, right, to those people. Yeah.
Thank you for ending the interview on that nice positive note about yoga magic. I entirely agree with you. And thank you for helping me to become a yoga teacher. Thank you for playing such a key role in building the yoga community in Brighton and Hove.
Oh, thank you for having me. And amazing work that you're doing, and just keep doing what you're doing. Really wonderful to talk about that earlier as well. Thank you, David.
Thank you.